Blog Talk Radio.
Special person who's been around boxing for a long time, Man who just passed this week, Mr. Emanuel Stewart. He's had his hand on many young boxers. He's been able to cult them into terrific boxers, and with many, many wins under his belt. It's a shame we lost another icon, boxing icon. Well, Zito,
yeah.
It's going to be a long night here tonight, trying to talk just about the number of fighters that Emanuel Stewart has had under his tutelage and all that they've done. But I think we can get through it, and I'm sure we'll have some personal contacts from our boxing historian who will be calling in a few minutes, and we'll go on from there, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's tragic, the loss of Emanuel Stewart. And as I know, like, right now, the cause of death is not determined as of yet.
No.
So we hope to find that out soon. And it's just a big loss for the boxing world. I mean, Emanuel Stewart, he could grab a hold of many of young boxers and mold them into a very efficient, you know, fighter.
Sure.
And he's worked with Aaron Pryor and Tommy Hearns, just to name the few of the bigger names and the, you know, more back in the day names. But
and Vladimir Klitschko also.
Klitschko. I mean, yes, exactly. Yeah. One, as I say, one of the bigger names of now, if not the biggest.
Yeah,
so,
he had a guy that we've had on this program many times, Tommy the Hitman Hearns, on. We did heavyweight Lennox Lewis and Klitschko. And he's been a frequent commentator on HBO Boxing, so it will be. I know he'd been in the hospital since September.
Yeah. Yeah,
but nobody ever says what his condition was, and I guess it was just terminal at this point. There's just so much that the body can do.
Yeah. It's going to be a big loss for the boxing world, man. He will be missed, sorely missed, and we have to see what kind of effect that it has on the. The fighters that, you know, he was training at, you know, mm-hmm. at now, so.
Yeah, Klitschko had just announced earlier in the week that Emanuel was still recovering from surgery, but he was going to be in his corner on November 10th when he fights, when he faces Wok in the O2 Arena in World Arena in Hamburg, Germany. So I wonder who's going to be there now.
Yeah, well, I don't generally worry about Klitschko or really any fighter and that Emanuel Stewart has trained, because his style is unique, and that is a style easy to follow.
Mm-hmm.
The only question would be just the round-to-round, the advice and, you know, just hearing his voice.
Sure. Yeah,
that's going to be more or less the problem.
Right. I had forgotten that he was one of the guys who he founded Kronk's gym, and then a bunch of people to help him out keeping it open. And
Original founder of Kronk's gym.
Right, and then they just did a remodeling job, which he got a lot of help from some of the boxers in doing, and cleaned the place up and opened it up to a really neat looking operation now.
Yeah, Emanuel Stewart, he helped many a young boxer out.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I see in the very, very near future, we've got another 24/7 coming. Have you heard anything about that one?
Yes, I know it's coming up, and it's the Juan Manuel Marquez Manny Pacquiao 24/7.
Right.
And
right.
Is this the third one?
Yeah.
I'm correct.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll see something new as far as the 24/7s go, but I mean, these guys know each other. They've been through this before. They've been through the 24/7s before. So I don't anticipate any surprises on any yet.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. At least with these two guys, it won't be foul language laced as as the past ones that we've seen here. But again, I think that the language that's thrown down there by Mr. Mayweather is also that that inner salesman of himself. I mean, he's the guy that sells himself the most, and I think that's pretty much the reason for that profanity laced program that he does.
Yeah, as far as Floyd goes, that's the game he plays. Mm-hmm. And whether it's people think is a natural reaction or that's something contemplated, that's to be said. But that's what gets him over, and that's what his thing is. And
sure.
You know, people he plays himself as a bad guy, and you know, people always they love rooting against or for a bad guy. But either way, he wins.
Sure.
As far as Pacquiao Marquez, these guys, first of all, they're more laid back as far as outward, you know, appearance. They will more or less let somebody talk for them to a certain point. At the same time, they also have a mutual respect for each other.
Sure.
And after fighting each other three times in all three are disputable, well, I don't think all three are disputable, but in the boxing eyes, all three are disputable, so there's no clear-cut winner to these guys. And they know it. They know
sure.
it. So, I mean, these guys, they're not going to go in saying anything they haven't said before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'd seen somewhere, I don't know if you had seen it, that Manny Pacquiao had to suspend his camp because of political reasons. I guess the Congress is in session over in the Philippines, and he's been trying to get his his political life restarted. Not that it's ever been any other thing than an absence, leave of absence while he's been working. But I understand he has not gone to camp yet, but is expected to be in there very shortly.
Well, yeah, and this has been the thing of Pacquiao's for a few years now. Freddie Roach complains about it, and I don't see any difference in the ring with him, to be honest. I mean, if he can do that and get the same results in the ring that he has been getting, then more power to him. I mean, that's, you know, he's multitasking very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think that, I mean, it's all on a person. But at the same time, I wouldn't exactly not get my full training against Juan Manuel Marquez, an opponent, a dangerous opponent who knows him very well.
Sure, sure. And I'm sure that Marquez is watching those films on a daily basis and is trying to figure a way to get in there. And then we did get a email from our good friend Danny, and he's now sparring with Marquez to give him the extra, I guess, kick that he needs to move on up. So that will be a interesting sidebar. Danny's also going to defend his world champion bare knuckle fist fighting on the 10th of or the 24th of November. I told him, I said, he has taken too many punches in the ring to be able to be of sound mind. But I think that's the up and coming thing now, the bare knuckle fighting.
Well, congratulations to Danny for getting the opportunity to spar with Marquez. And being a bare knuckle fighter, I mean, you have to be a tough guy, but I remember on the show, Danny was telling us that guys don't throw as many punches bare knuckles because of the repercussions. You don't want to get hit back with bare knuckles. So I mean, it's a little different than people would think.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. And, oh, we want to send our best wishes out to Adriana. What the heck, Danny's last name? Henderson. Henderson on her 13th birthday on Thursday. She's the daughter of one of our co-hosts, the big dog, Benny Henderson. And
right.
She had her big party was on Thursday night in Dallas, Texas. So we want to send our best wishes out to her and to Benny and the family. You know, another name we haven't heard in a while, Ricky Hatton is coming back on the 24th. He's going to fight former WBA welterweight title holder, Valachev Tenchenko. Are you aware of that one?
Yes, I'm aware. Ricky Hatton is making his out of retirement fight. He's coming back. And for the last thing we heard of Ricky, we didn't have any good news.
No.
So.
Hey, we're joined now by our boxing historian, Dr. Chris Panarella. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Okay, guys, how you been? Haven't talked to you for a while.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So I'm an old historian. I'm an old historian. What's going on, guys?
Well, we were just talking earlier about Emanuel Stewart, the passing of Emanuel Stewart, and we knew that you'd have some kind of...
I didn't know that. When did it happen?
Thursday evening, early Friday.
Oh, you know what? I've been out working on a project over on a road we're doing, putting a private road in, and I really haven't watched... God almighty, Emanuel Stewart all of a sudden like that, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, he's been in and out of the hospital since September.
I didn't know that. What was his problem?
They haven't announced that yet. I know he had surgery because Klitschko had put a bulletin out that even though he had had surgery, he'd recovered enough that he would be coming to be in his corner on the 10th. So that's
a shame. I really, you know what I always thought? That he was the best trainer in the world today. I really believe that. I've heard him say things that I haven't heard in 40 years. He loved the Basilio DeMarco fight. He would refer back to all the fights in the 50s, and he was just a pleasure to listen to. And I saw him when he first brought Tommy Hearns to Philly, and Tommy Hearns had 12 straight knockouts. And he fought this little Alfonso Heyman from Philadelphia. And Heyman went low, fought from a crouch, put his gloves up to his face like Mike Tyson.
Right.
And Hearns wanted to show everybody in Philly how bad he was. And he kept punching Alfonso Heyman in the forehead. By the fourth round, his hands were nearly broken. And he couldn't hit anymore. He won a 10-round decision. He was the first guy ever to go. And Stewart was hollering in the corner. You know, stop it. Don't punch him in the damn head. You're going to break. Well, I went in the dressing room after the fight, and his hands looked like two balloons.
Wow.
You know, I mean, they were swollen, but Tommy Hearns, Alfonso Hammond stayed the whole fight. He couldn't knock him out because he wouldn't let him hit him on the chin.
Yeah.
And he never turned his head to the right so that he could get a broadside shot. He made him hit him in the forehead. And I laughed the whole fight. Everybody was waiting for this great knockout artist. And what I still remember is how tall and skinny he was. His right hand was like a damn spear coming at you. It was so skinny, but he caught you at the end of it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
He didn't hit you with a bent arm. It was a dead straight punch. His right hand would come down. And Heyman would like dip his head and catch it on the top of the forehead. And that's the only way he could survive.
Wow.
And then I liked Emanuel Stewart. And my trainer always told me, fight behind your left foot. Let your left foot be out in front of you. That way you can move away from a punch. You can dip. You can do all this. Emmanuel Stewart's the only other guy that ever said that, and I must have watched 5,000 fights since then. And he's the only other guy to say, look out for this guy because he fights behind his left foot.
Mm-hmm.
And he would jab with it, and it was a power jab. The guy was a beautiful fighter, hard
mm-hmm.
puncher. And I was impressed with Emmanuel Stewart from that day on. And I just liked the guy. I liked his style.
Uh-huh.
You know, I like how he handled the Klitschko brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They're difficult to handle, but he took them a long way.
Right.
You know, like I say, his Kronk's gym was legendary. He's had a lot of great fighters out of there, but made so much money with the Klitschko brothers and some of the bigger fighters that he trained them all. Probably the best trainer of the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I just liked the guy, and he was a pleasure to listen to.
Sure.
You know, on the Saturday night fights. Sorry,
if you had a magic ball, who do you think, or magic, whatever they call it, it's crystal ball, who do you think Klitschko will turn to now to be in the corner with him?
Probably somebody from overseas, because his style's pretty much set. He's not going to change anything drastically. He has his own training schedule. He trains at night. He runs at night. He spars at night. He doesn't do anything during the day. He's got an entirely different training schedule than any other fighter. He said, I fight at night, I train at night. He doesn't run in the morning. He doesn't run every day. He runs about every third day. And I can understand that for a big guy. Running wears you out.
Sure.
It's too much to do in one day to get up in the morning and run 5 miles, then go to the gym, skip rope. It's too much. The old saying, you leave your fight in the gym. You can wear yourself out, and I think the Klitschko brothers, he's more of a confidence builder for them than anything because, he kind of made them believe that they could be the best, the champions.
Right.
And I don't know who would take them on. I mean, there's no sense in getting a guy like Freddie Roach or none of the American guys would want to go over to Germany and train him. I don't think they'd want to live over there and train over there.
Uh-huh.
You know, most of his fights are there. They got it. So I don't know. I really don't know who would train those big guys. I mean, they're not hard to train. They don't. They just they have their own conditioning program.
Mm-hmm.
They had both Vitaly and the brother. They had their fights in the magazine, in one of the strength magazines.
Mm-hmm.
They had the way they train. I was amazed. First guys I've ever heard of that never trained during the day.
Huh.
You know?
Sure.
He says, I fight at night, I run at night. We fight late in the evening, and I do all my sparring at night. He says, my time clock is set up for night now. I don't train during the day, then fight 11 o'clock at night, So they're pretty much set in their ways. How are you going to change the big guy? He's got one, he sticks his paw out there, his left hand, and then he tries to knock your head off with the right. I mean, anybody could, what can you teach him now? It's too late to teach. Too big and slow to teach him to throw a good left hook. He'll never pivot in, with a left hook. He's going to be a right-hand puncher forever. And, the smaller brother, he could stand some improvement, but not a hell of a lot. I mean, I don't know what he could do to him,
Yeah, well,
so
they have a fight Sunday night.
True.
Vitaly does fight Sunday night in the Ukraine.
The opponent didn't sound too good to me.
No. It looks like one of the other guys used to say it's a tomato can fight.
A tune-up.
Right.
But for who? Who wants to fight him? I don't know anybody out there begging to fight him.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much talent out there. He's giving these shots to these Europeans. Is he fighting an American or a European?
He's fighting a European.
Mm-hmm. I didn't recognize the name. I didn't know. I didn't recognize the name. But
Chris,
and Vladimir, he lets his big brother wipe everybody out, and then he takes the soft guy.
Sure.
he says, wipe this guy out for me. I'll fight his little brother or something. You know what I mean? I'll fight his sister. And he don't have all the heart in the world. That guy, the
right.
younger one, Vladimir, and he don't have the chin the big brother has either.
No,
so, no, or the mentality.
Well, yeah. He's not. I watched again a rerun of the fight where he fought the. Remember he had the big cut. He fought the English champion. You know what I'm talking about. 6'5", 240. Oh, Christ. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm blanking on names right now.
The heavyweight champion. He beat everybody. And he retired right after he fought the...
Lennox Lewis?
Lennox Lewis.
Oh, yes.
Right after he fought Vitaly quit, he retired. That's the first guy he ever fought bigger than him, the first guy that was ever knocking him around and coming back strong and took the best that he had.
Uh-huh.
And even with that massive bad cut he had, he was starting to win that fight. Then they had to stop it. It was an ugly, ugly cut.
Yeah.
You remember that one?
Yeah, now I do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, he didn't fight. You notice he didn't fight after that?
No, he's getting more
Lennox
money.
Lennox Lewis retired.
Yeah, he's getting more money as a commentator with...
right. Right.
You know?
That's punishment.
Yeah.
Now, I saw him in person down at Fight Down Atlantic City. He fought Galatka. Andrew Galata.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He fought him. Galata didn't show up at the arena. The fight was supposed to go on. He was supposed to be in the arena, and he had no opponent. And Lennox Lewis was pacing around down there. What's going on? They had to bring Galata to the arena in a police car. With a police escort. He didn't want to show up that night. Nope, they never told that out on television, right? They never said it. Galata didn't want to stay. Had to get him out of his room to come to the fight. And when he came in, he looked like he was scared to death. And he didn't really want to be there. And he got knocked out early. You know? Everybody's going, where's Galata? Where's Galata? He's not in the dressing room. You know, the word passed around, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I went back. My buddy... had the ticket concession. He was in charge of tickets, printing tickets. He got us ringside seats. We paid $50. We wound up at ringside. So we went back there, and there's no Galata.
Wow.
15 minutes before the fight. And he didn't have a chance to warm up. You know, and I mean, that was an easy win for Lennox Lewis. And, of course, he fight Tyson after he was over the hill. But then he ran into Vitaly, and these young, strong guys, bigger than him. Vitaly was much bigger than him. I was surprised. He looked a lot bigger in the ring. And then he retired after that. But, yeah, Galata, he didn't want to come to the fight. He didn't want to show that night. He just, everybody in the place was laughing. Where the hell is he? You know how the word spreads around? Everybody,
sure.
And the Polish people, they had 5,000 Polish people there wearing the red and white uniforms.
Uh-huh.
Chanting around the halls like an army, 5,000 of them, chanting, screaming around the halls. Then they all came in the gym into the arena at the same time. They took the whole second floor, the highest thing. They had the whole stands. That'd be 5,000 of them there, all cheering for Andrew. And they kept yelling, stomping their feet, and Galata wasn't there. And then they found out. Everybody said, we drive all the way down here to Atlantic City. We're not going to see a fight. But that was comical that night. I said, you know what? Galata's got a head problem.
Sure.
He's got a head problem.
Yeah.
You know, he does something wrong with him. You know, big as he was.
Next week we have a fight with Lucien Bute. Can you give us your thoughts on Bute and how?
Well, who's his opponent going to be? Who's his opponent?
Dennis Gracheff, Grachev.
Okay. Bute fights a different style. He's a tremendous body puncher.
Yeah.
That Mexican fighter had him out on his feet and was winning the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know what, this guy, he's going to get knocked out that night. You remember it went the full, and then the next time he fought him, he knocked him out.
Mm-hmm.
The guy with the heavy beard, the rough-looking Mexican guy.
Lebrado Andrade.
Yeah, right. Now, you know what? I've seen Bute fight shorter guys, and he jabs. He's got long arms, and then he throws that uppercut, that left uppercut. It's a left uppercut to the body, and he's knocked a few guys out with it. But it's a dangerous punch. If somebody's waiting, can time a return right hand, they're going to catch him on the chin, and he doesn't have the greatest chin in the world. So you know what? He's got pretty much. He's had a lot of hand-picked opponents. He didn't expect that tough a fight from that Mexican fella.
Uh-huh.
At least he had a Mexican name. I don't know if it was from Mexico, but he was a bigger guy, you know. And he had a great chin too. That guy had a great chin. But Butte, I've seen almost every one of his fights. At 168, he's tough. He's tall. Lazy. He's a good body puncher. But you know what he does? He's 6'2". He fights it at the height of a guy 5'8". You notice how he drops way down?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In other words, he comes down to a short guy. If he doesn't take advantage of his height, he fights low. You know, a lot of guys do that. They'll come in and fight a shorter guy, and they'll fight low. They don't stand up and you took advantage of their reach. So he's got some flaws, but I'm not really awful familiar with the guy he's fighting. I don't know if I've seen him before. Has he got a good record?
It's a pretty fair record. It's nothing. Mm-hmm. It's nothing. He's going to. I don't think he's going to suffer any loss of points or anything like that.
He's not going to stay up at night worrying about this guy. In other words. So, well, you know what? He's such a draw, and he makes so much money. He's on a roll, fighting easy opponents. He packs the house no matter who he fights, a good fighter, a bad fighter. You know, he's fighting up in Montreal. I don't think has he ever fought out of Montreal yet?
I don't think so. That's where he fought our friend Glenn Johnson.
He fought Carl Potts in Nottingham, England.
Oh, that's right.
His last
fight. About that one.
Yes,
he fought Frosch.
Oh, yeah, Carl Frosch destroyed him in maybe, four or five rounds?
Yeah, I think it was five rounds.
Yeah,
How long ago was that?
That was Butte's, his most recent fight.
He fought Frosch?
Yep.
I didn't know that. I've been wondering why I haven't seen him. So did he go to England and fight Frosch?
Yeah, he went to Nottingham, England, to fight Carl Frosch.
Yeah,
and Frosch give him a shellacking.
A real good one.
Well, like I say, the guy has flaws.
Sure.
The guy has flaws, and you know, against these hand-picked guys that he fights in Montreal, he looks great, but he's got a lot of flaws. Now Frosch is taller than him and got an iron chin, and you know, probably could stay a long time with him, and then. You know, he's very hard to fight. Frosch is so damn awkward. He drives you crazy trying to fight him because you don't know where he's coming from. You know, I must have missed that fight. I must have missed it, but I'm sorry I did because, like I say, Butte's got a lot of flaws. And Frosch is a pretty big guy. He's bigger boned and heavier in his shoulders. And, you know, and he's also tough. I mean, he could be beaten by a guy like... Andre Ward can outbox him, outfight him, and get inside, you know, beat him, win the fight on the end. But Butte can't do that. So I didn't know that. You know what? I've never seen that rerun on. I watch the Showtime Championship Fighting and all that stuff every night. You know, I see who's on, and you know if it's one I haven't seen, but I've never seen that fight.
I don't think they carried it on Showtime. That happened overseas. They didn't even have the pay-per-view because I had to find out about it the next day myself. I would have watched that.
Okay, so they probably didn't sell the rights to Showtime then.
Exactly.
Because I've seen every one of his fights, but it would not surprise me. I'm not really surprised that Frosch beat him. I didn't know he'd give him a good shellacking, though.
Early in the fight, Butte was moving around. He looked pretty good in the first round. And then from, like, round two on, Frosch, he didn't let him move around. Frosch closed the space and just had Butte on the ropes. And it seemed like Butte couldn't handle what was coming at him.
That wouldn't surprise me. Frosch, like you say, he's so awkward, so hard to fight, You don't know what the hell he's going to do. And he punches from all angles. You know, I can see where he could upset Butte.
Yeah.
You know the guy that wasted a lot of, he's got a lot of talent, but a terrible trainer. The guy that holds his hands over his face. The real muscular guy, the shortest guy that was in that tournament. He was a middleweight champion, and he moved up to 168.
Arthur Abraham.
He got a lot of chin, a lot of heart, but a terrible style. Oh,
yes.
If Emmanuel Stewart had him, he could have changed his whole. There's one guy where a trainer would have made a world of difference. A good trainer, Emmanuel Stewart would have taken him and opened him up, moved them hands around, got him jabbing more, dipping more, going in low, you know, throwing overhand punch, changed his whole style around. Instead of coming in with his hands in front of his face and getting his face punched in, he never used to throw a punch for seven rounds, and he'd knock you out in the eighth or ninth. And,
yeah.
You know, I said, what the hell is it with this guy? You know, if I trained a guy that strong and that tough, I wouldn't. I mean, he could have copied Mike Tyson if he wanted to hold his hands a little lower so that he could see, you know, bob and weave a little bit. But he covered his face up, like, you know. These guys would punch him. Yeah. I never liked his style. And, you know, he could have easily another trainer, grab him for about 6 months and turn him right around. Even today, I think he could turn him around if he'd want to give it a try. But I don't know of anybody other than Emmanuel Stewart, you know, that could probably work with him enough, you know, have the patience to work with him. Because he's been doing that all his life. He'd probably revert right back to it. You know, Mike Tyson's the first guy that I ever saw hold his both palms of his against his chin, and just give you all you saw was his eyes and forehead coming at you. You know, and Tyson had short arms, and he could throw looping body punches hard. His right hook to the body was devastating, and I wouldn't even call it an uppercut. Although he was right-handed, it was a right hook. It looked like a left-hander's, you know, hook, right hook. And I saw him kill a couple guys with it. Man, it went right through his rib cage.
Wow.
And you know how hard he hit. Mm-hmm. He had extra. Oh, yeah. And I was surprised Tyson walked in front of me at one time down at Atlantic City and they walked right by me. I'm 5'8". I would say he's 5'10". I was 5'10", 5'10 and a half. My son is about 5'11", and they looked about even. And Tyson's shoulders are round, and they're not broad and square. They're rounder. You know, he's like got a puncher's body, like old Bob Satterfield had. And
compact.
Yeah. But, I enjoyed that tournament. It was 168, so all fighting like that. It was curious to see how they do against different styles, you know. But Butte, I don't know. When you ask about Butte, he's a Frenchman fighting in Montreal. It's like fighting an Irishman in Dublin. You're going to have to kill him to win, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a homeboy. I thought he was a home fighter, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't. My favorite fighter, I got to give you my favorite fighter, guys, Rios.
Brandon Rios.
Brand, what do you think? Did you see his last fight?
Against Mike Alvarado?
Yeah.
That
was a war.
Oh, yes, it was. That was.
And the other guy was blasting him. And just when you think Rios is going to go and he comes back and knocks the other guy out. He's done that three times. I've seen him three times. Look awful. About the seventh, eighth, ninth round. He connects. He looks like he's going to lose the fight. There's no hope for him. Son of the gun comes back. I really enjoyed that fight because he had a beautiful style. You know, never stops coming forward. And that other guy was hitting him pretty hard. He was a good fighter, that guy. And he reached down. You know, he's got some extra gas in the tank. You know, he can reach down when he's in trouble and come out on top. You know, he's got a style like Andre Ward. He can fight any way he wants, and he's always dangerous. Always dangerous. I'm waiting to see his next fight. They're mentioning Mayweather, Pacquiao. But I don't think Pacquiao or Mayweather would really want to fight him at this point. What do you think?
Well, I don't know if he's a weight class below. He just moved up to 140. And, well, he was fighting at 135 coming in.
135. He moved up to 140, yeah. He's got room for a few more pounds. He could. Pacquiao is not a giant welterweight. You know what I mean? He could fight Pacquiao. When Pacquiao and Marquez fight, what weight is that? What's the weight limit? 140?
I'm pretty sure it should be 147, if I'm correct.
147?
Yeah.
Well, Rios could carry 147 very easily, I think.
I agree.
I think he could. Those guys aren't coming in at 140. We all know that. They hydrate and they come in the ring. They're 148, 149, 150.
Have a caller in here. Chris wants to talk to you. Go ahead, Sal.
Hi, gentlemen. Hi, I'm Sal from New York City. I just chime in. I think my favorite fighter, I think he's got a lot of promise, and I think they robbed him was in a couple of fights with Devin Alexander, Zab Judah, was Lucas Matisse. I think he's a crowd pleaser. He's got a great chin.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite divisions are 160, 168. I think those guys are fighting each other. I think Chad Dawson was a great disappointment. I think he tends to choke. I think he's got the talent. He's got the strength and he's got the ability. But I think it mentally he lost to Andre Ward. I think he had the ability and the style and the reach and the strength to beat him. So he beat himself, you know. But
you're right.
You agree, right? I mean,
You're right. You're right. 100%. Mm-hmm. He's got the most talent, but he can't win. He can't beat those. I thought he was going to give him a better fight than he did, but he's got a lot of talent, a lot of natural talent,
mm-hmm.
you know. But Andre Ward, he can pull the plug on you, boy. He'll change styles right in the middle of a fight, right at the. I mean, mm-hmm. he's an amazing fighter to me. I mean, he's just around at the wrong time, that guy. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like. Sometimes you're born at the wrong time, you know.
Like Joe Frazier was born at the wrong time when he fought Ali.
Yeah, poor Joe.
Exactly.
Poor Joe. You know, he had to come along. You know, well, a lot of guys. You know, they came along at the wrong time. Had there been another era, they would have been champions. But, you know, that happens in all sports, I guess.
Hmm.
You know, had it been another era, he would have been the best. You know,
I want to get back to your point with Lucas Matisse. And I totally agree with you. They underrate him. The press corps and boxing underrates him. But he is an amazing fighter who should be undefeated, to be honest.
Well, why do you think that is? I'll give you my thoughts. You tell me why you think they underrate him, and I'll give you my thoughts.
Oh, well, first off, he's not an American fighter. He's not American as far as marketability. Second off, he has a grizzly style. He's not going to knock you out with one punch necessarily all the time. He'll break you down. And it's just grizzly and gruesome sometimes. He has that hard right to the body that people have trouble with. Hard, straight right to the body. As far as that, he's just not marketable as far as easy to rob him.
You know, I think that one thing, I agree with everything you said, and I'll just add, I think that Sergio Martinez, he's being backed by the promoters and by, you know, HBO and such, Showtime, I think, whatever, in this country. So they don't want, you know, as they're both Argentinian fighters, they don't want anybody to overshadow Sergio Martinez. So I think, well, he's the Argentinian of choice in this era. But until Sergio Martinez does something to eliminate himself, so to speak, as a world class fighter, I think that Lucas Matisse is going to be in his shadow. You know, I think that has something to do with it too.
Well, I remember Sergio Martinez; he had to earn his stripes too. I remember the fight with him and Kermit Cintron, where he hit Cintron, made Cintron say "ouch." Cintron took a knee for a 10 count. Complained about a headbutt, and the ref let the fight go on. Sergio clearly won the fight afterwards, and they called it a draw. So, I mean,
As far as I'm concerned, Lucas Matisse is undefeated. You know, the fights with Zab Judah and Devin Alexander, as far as I'm concerned, he won those. You know, I think he won those. So as far as I'm concerned, he's undefeated.
Yeah. And have you seen his more recent fights?
Yeah, the last fight, was it a knockout? In the, what is it, the first, second round? What did he knock the guy out? I forget.
I think maybe the 10th or 11th round. He fought a guy named Elusha Gunn. And the guy.
Oh, the African guy. Was it African guy?
Yeah.
That was a great fight, though, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that guy was tough. He was tough, but Matisse, in usual manner, broke him down.
Hmm.
Chris, let me ask you. Go ahead. I'm going to ask, what do you think of the fighter that won recently over the Polish fighter with a tremendous knockout record? And nobody had ever knocked him out. He's a Polish name. The guy was a tall, rangy. Was he Argentinian? Is that who you're talking about?
This was super middleweight, or was it? Super middleweight.
So I think it was a super middleweight or middleweight. I caught the fight. The guy shocked me. It was a tremendous fight. Oh, my God. I was really impressed with him. The Polish guy had never lost. I think he was a left-hander. It was maybe his first or second fight in this country.
Golovkin?
Golovkin won the fight. Golovkin is undefeated.
Over,
he's middleweight. He's undefeated. Yeah.
I think his name's Golovkin.
Yeah, boy, what a fighter. I mean, that Polish boy had never been knocked out. And he got massacred that night.
Oh, yeah, I remember that fight, too. I remember
that
fight. That
was a great fight. Great fight. That guy has tremendous potential, that guy. I only saw him one time.
And the guy he was fighting was kind of a slick guy, kind of fast, a little more of a boxer's mentality.
Yeah, and he gave everybody he ever fought a hard time, and I think he only lost one fight in his life. This guy took him out like nothing. I mean, I'm anxious to see him come back and fight another opponent, but who would want to fight him now after that fight? I mean,
well,
he looks like he's...
And we're talking about Gennady Golovkin. He's undefeated. He was Uzbekistan, and he was fighting some other guy who was undefeated. But, yeah, he stopped him. Yeah, another Polish boy, right. Yeah,
is that where he's from?
I don't remember who it was.
I thought he was from the same area as the old guy who used to wear the ponytail on the back. You know, the little pigtail? He was a 140-pounder.
Oh, that was, from Australia.
Fighter.
He was, I forget his name. You're right, that's an old-time guy, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
he was a great fighter. He was
a great fighter.
I thought that part of Russia, the Russian Republic, whatever, he was
Uzbekistan or something like that, or Kazakhstan.
Yeah, one of those little countries. He was.
Yeah.
Oh boy, what's his name? He had a great right hand. And he quit in the corner against the English boy, that never got
Ricky
tired.
Ricky Hatton.
Dr. Zoo.
Costa Zoo.
Exactly. He was great.
Christ, he must be from the same town the way he fights the guy as Costa Zoo, because somebody's trained that guy right. I think he's going to give everybody trouble. That guy, I don't know who's going to beat him.
Hmm.
Well, he was a middleweight, am I right?
Yeah.
Well, Costa Zoo was 140 pounder, yeah.
No, Costa Zoo was 140,
Zoo
but the guy that recently fight knocked out the Polish fighter.
They were middleweights,
He was a 160 pounder, if I remember.
Yeah, Gennady Golovkin.
Am I correct or not?
Yes,
or was he 168?
He's the WBA champion at 160.
160,
Gennady Golovkin, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that guy. Look out for that guy. If we got the same guy. Christ, I watched so many fights, I can't think of the name. I get mixed up. Yeah. How about that card where there were four or five good fights on it a week ago, you know?
That's great. That's great.
They had super fights that night. There was one good one after another. They all were good.
Oh, yeah.
And after a while, you get you can't remember the damn name of so many of them. and you know, so Yeah, well, that I'll be looking for that guy next time. Now I know his name. Now I remember it.
I want to ask you, gentlemen, please be frank with me. You know, I'm 50 years old. You know, I was been a boxing. I've been in and out. You know, I've kind of grown somewhat jaded with boxing now because of the politics. Hey, what do you think? Since we have like all these alphabet championships, to me, a championship means nothing. You have WBC, WBA, IBF, WBO. Who's a champion nowadays? Nobody. It's just a good fight. It's like the championship is meaningless. You only have one champion. You can't have four or five different champions in the weight division. What do you guys think of that in terms of how, you know, the impact on boxing itself, having all these, you know, alphabet champions?
Well, if you want to go back to the earlier years when you had a featherweight 126, 135 lightweight, 147 welterweight, 160 was the middle, then you had 75. There weren't a lot of fights. There was a lot of gaps in between fights. And they've kind of created that super middleweight division because a 15-pound gap is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge in the ring. So the poor guys, and I can remember guys like Georgie Benton, Chuck Toldsby, Philadelphia fighters were great fighters, but they were too big for the middleweights, too small for the light heavies. They were 167, 165, 168. So
Fort Amiel Griffiths,
no,
right. Fort Amiel
yeah,
Griffiths,
they had
yeah.
no, they had nowhere to go, so to speak. So
mm-hmm.
I like the fact that they've got more champions, but I do get confused at the three different champions. You know, who's WBA, who's WBA, who's
mm-hmm.
this, who's that? You know, those guys get a fortune for every time they fight. You have to pay that association a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
That's not free. When you fight, for them to sanction your fight, you got to give them a lot of money. And it's money, you know, it's blown money. I mean, and their fees are huge. And Don King was great at promoting fighters and paying that fee. Jose Suleiman, the perfect example. He would demand $100,000 for a fight, and King would give it to him because he would jump a guy up in his standings 8 or 9 points to make him look like a good contender. And I mean, it allows too much hanky-panky. You know what I'm saying? It allows too much, too many guys have the same amount of power. What is there any is there any difference between the WBA, WBO, this, you know? I'd like to see them all consolidated rather than have three. I really would like to see one champion, you know, not three different titles.
Exactly. But
these guys that make all this money by sanctioning the WBA, you know, they make a lot of money. They don't want to give it up. So what happens, a guy like Don King comes along, he can't fight for one title. He fights for the other one or the other one, you know. He's got three guys, three different people he can go to, and he's got enough front money to buy his way in. And that's one of the problems with boxing is those organizations are very corrupt. No other word for it. Just corrupt, you know. They can be bought. It's been done a million times. So that's what I, you know, it's confusing to me, and I can't remember all the fights and who fought what. It's very difficult for me.
Right.
So that's my opinion. But I grew up in a day when, you know, you had the it was pretty tough to move from 135 to 147. Yeah, you had the 135 champion, and you're going to fight. Who are you going to fight? Ray Robinson at 147?
Unless you were Henry Armstrong, remember? He was unbelievable.
Henry Armstrong had more energy than any fighter ever saw. He would wear you out. Just wear you out. He fought two people I knew personally. He fought Billy Angelo, and he fought Al Tribbiani.
Mm-hmm.
You know, during his peak. I mean, he was amazing to come in. But then he did better against the 147 and the guys are fighting at 154 than he did against the lightweight. He came in against Henry Armstrong. Came in against Lou Ambers, and Lou Ambers had him solved. He used to put his head in your chest and throw a lot of body. Lou Ambers beat him with uppercuts, short right uppercuts, followed by a left hook. So he was an amazing fighter. Armstrong was amazing. He was amazing.
And they said they actually believe he beat Seferino Garcia at 160, but They didn't want him to get more than one. You know, he wanted three championships for one person. They didn't want him to have four. So they still robbed him with the Ceferino Garcia fight, but he actually beat Ceferino Garcia.
There's a name out of the past, Ceferino Garcia. Mm. When I was used to train at the Kensington Gym in Philadelphia, that poster was on the wall. Ceferino Garcia against Henry Armstrong, and there was another one, Ceferino Garcia against Billy Angel. Billy Angel was from our neighborhood.
Mm.
He fought Benny Leonard when Benny Leonard came out of retirement, and that fight was supposed to be at 154. Henry Armstrong didn't want to fight him at 160. He wanted Garcia to come down to 154. Did it ever take place? That's what I'm wondering. I'm trying to remember.
Oh yeah, they did fight. They did fight, but they gave the decision to
Garcia.
They gave it to Garcia. They did fight.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You remember us talking about Harry Greb?
He fought the toy bulldog.
He beat Mickey Walker. I looked it up in my ring record book from 1939.
He was a killer.
He beat Mickey Walker in a 15-round fight, and it was a top gate attraction, the most money ever for a middleweight fight up to that time. It was the most money ever paid to see middleweights. And I looked it up. I got a book from 1939 that had every bout ever taken place in 39. I got one from 34. I got a bunch of old, and I just wanted to bring that up. Harry Greb did beat Mickey Walker.
He fought a lot blind. He fought many of his matches. He was blind.
Yeah, he was blind in one eye, but he beat Gene Tunney.
Eye.
We were talking about that. He beat Gene Tunney.
The only person to ever beat him.
He beat Gene Tunney. And he went to Jack Dempsey's camp, offered to be a sparring partner for him when he fought Tunney. Dempsey wanted no parts of him. He wouldn't let him be a sparring partner. Didn't want any parts, and I don't want that guy. And then that was it. If Greb showed up at camps, I'll spar, whatever you want to do. You didn't want to train with him. So I must have been a hell of a fighter,
For sure. Chris, what do you think?
What are you looking forward to now? Who do you want to see coming up, the ones coming up?
Well, we got the first fight coming up would be Butte. We already talked about the next one is on the 24th. You got Ricky Hatton coming back.
Hatton's coming back?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Man, he got tagged a lot in his last four or five fights. He took some god-awful shellackings.
Well,
I don't know.
He's not really – he's up against Sinchenko, so he's not going to – well – they say like Geddy Bell used to say, any given Sunday, and then you lose.
Yeah.
You win. And then on the 10th of December, we've got Miguel Kessler coming back. He's going to fight in Belfast, Brian McGee. So that would be the ones we're looking at this point. Zito?
Right. I'm going to tell you, keep an eye out for Rios and Mayweather or Rios and Pacquiao. They're going to fight down the road.
Really?
Rios is a big attraction now. I'm waiting for that one. That's the one I'm waiting for.
Hmm.
All the other ones, I'll watch them, but I'm not really. I want to see Rios in against one or the other. Because I think he could take Mayweather's best. He may have enough left after 9 or 10 rounds to pull it off. He's been able to do it so far. I'm going to see what happens.
Yeah. Well, a fight I'm interested in seeing, and actually, I don't know the exact date, but Andre Berto is making his return to the ring, and he's fighting Robert the Ghost Guerrero.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Going to be a tough fight.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough fight for him.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Guerrero's got a great chin.
Great technique. Great, good skill.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough fight. It's going to be a tough fight. Yeah, I was surprised Berto when he got knocked out. I was really surprised that night when he got beat.
Andre, yeah.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I thought he started out as a middleweight, and he realized he wasn't his frame couldn't carry fight the bigger middleweights because they come in the ring at 170, and he dropped down to welterweight. And I thought he was doing real good. I was shocked when Ortiz knocked him out, beat him. You know, he shocked the hell out of me. You know. So, yeah, I'd like to see him come back, see what he can do now. He can get his act together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So. Well, how's everything in Florida, Frank?
Everything's fine, Chris. We're just waiting for you to get down here to play golf.
You know what? I'm supposed to fly down on the 7th of November.
Uh-huh.
And I got a kidney stone flaring up. I went to the doctor last week. He said there's two of them there. I go back Thursday, he's going to let me know what he wants to do with him, and that's going to depend on whether I'm going to Florida or not. So I'm waiting to hear. I go to him next Thursday.
Right.
The laser always better. They use the laser on
that. There's always a card at the door.
You know? So I called Ronnie. I told him I'd be down. I told everybody I'd be down. Yeah. Now that thing flared up on me, and I said, oh, boy, I don't know if it's going to stop me from going or not. I might be able to come down. I might not. If not, the last time I was supposed to go to Puerto Rico, I couldn't go. I was in a hospital, so it's my plane ticket. I've got to use it before the first of the year, or I just have to throw it away. So I thought I'd take a trip to Florida.
Good.
So if I do make it, I'll look you up, Frank.
Yeah,
we'll
please
do. We'll do the show. We'll do the show from there.
That's
how's
right.
That?
That's fine.
Okay.
That's great.
All right,
guys, we're just about up to the to our hour here. Sal, we want to thank you for calling in.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
It was a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you next week, talking to you next week. All right, guys.
Thanks,
I'll see you. Bye. Bye.
Bye, gentlemen. Bye.
All right, see.
All right, well, I want to thank our guest, Dr. Chris. Definitely it's a pleasure. And thank you, Sal, for calling in. And I want to wish Paul, my brother's trainer, good luck in his upcoming fight to him and to all the Black Feather team. And I just want to say that this show is in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call in.
That's right. Thank you. So we want to thank everybody for calling, for our plans to call in, and everyone that listens around the world. We want to thank you especially for the growing number of fans that we've picked up over the last 6 months. It's really really a great honor to my son Bob that this show has been able to go and grow, and we appreciate everybody that contributes. These programs are brought to you each and every week in grateful appreciation the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services, especially those who've lost their lives. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell of the Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle of the Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford of the Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Patrolman Alonzo Moses of the Philadelphia Police Department, Patrolman Brian Murphy from the Plymouth Township Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, but sometime we will be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the sun shine on your face. May the rains fall softly on your fields. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the hollow of his hand.
Shema Yisrael. fiery blade engaged to lead, he'd break the bravest in the